Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Setlist, in association with 7 Digital.
This week, IFBI Stats, iHeart and The Weeknd. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
As ever, we're going to be taking a look back through some of the biggest and most interesting stories in the music industry of the last week, assuming my voice holds out long enough. A week when it appeared that France is going to win the race to implement the European Copyright Directive first.
Yeah, because since...
It is a race.
The last time we did a proper edition of Setlist, that Copyright Directive has been passed by the European Parliament. We didn't have a proper edition last week, did we?
No.
We had another of our special editions.
Yeah.
Because I had an impromptu trip to Oslo that kind of came out of the blue, that was nice, and you died.
Yes.
So we had a week where I was in Norway and you were dead. But then I'm
getting better.
I came back from Norway. You came back from the dead. And so here we are. So we didn't have a podcast the week that the European Parliament finally passed the European Copyright Directive. But I think actually with hindsight, that was probably for the best. Because we would have felt we had to talk about it.
And it's boring.
But there wasn't really anything new to say other than it had been passed. And as you say, the only other thing to say is that since it was passed, the French culture minister, whose name I don't know, because you haven't put it in the notes. The French culture minister. Let's assume I wouldn't be able to pronounce it anyway.
Yeah, I think it's a fair assumption.
It's a very French name. The French culture minister was speaking at a TV industry event, and he was saying the copyright directive is brilliant. Article 13, which isn't actually Article 13 anymore.
It's Article 17.
Yeah, they renumbered it all, which is just as well, actually, because in the final draft, after it had been through all of those revisions last year, and the final draft they were voting on before they did the renumbering, in the music bit, which kind of in the middle, the articles that were kind of relevant to the music industry, not only did we have Article 13, 14, 15 and 16, there was Article minus 14 and 16B. I don't know why with one they went with minus and the other they went with B. Don't understand that. But anyway, all of that nonsense was taken out. Everything was renumbered. So what was Article 13 was Article 17. I don't know if that's how they managed to get it through. Maybe some of the MEPs were looking at it and they'd been told by YouTube, Article 13's bad, and they were reading whatever is now Article 13, and they were like, don't understand why YouTube are anything of this. Let's vote it through, maybe. There was a little thing that there was actually not that confusion, but there was another confusion during the vote.
Yes.
I never got completely to the bottom of it. I think they were having a vote on whether to have a vote.
Yeah.
Which is the sort of thing...
Sounds like the sort of thing they'd do.
...happens in the European Parliament. They were voting on whether to have a vote on whether to exclude Articles 11 and 13 in the original draft. So the two controversial articles. And some MEPs said they didn't realise that that was what they were voting on. So they voted not to have that vote. And they would have voted to have that vote in anyway. There was a bit of confusion. But it got passed. Article 17, as it is now, the French culture minister thinks is brilliant, and his line was, this will have zero impact on internet users and a hugely positive impact for creative people.
Yeah.
Paraphrasing slightly. I mean, also, he presumably said,
he said it in French,
so I'm allowed to paraphrase because it wouldn't be accurate even if I did a direct translation. And then, as you alluded to at the start, he said, we've already got a new bit of copyright law ready to go in France with some new anti-piracy measures they've got planned. And they're going to try and get as much of the copyright directive as they can, including Article 13/17, into that new piece of law, which could assuming it doesn't get stuck in the French lawmaking process, be law by the autumn.
Yes, and that's a thing because obviously EU members, like, say, the UK, have 2 years to implement new laws. And so it sort of is a race to get there's certainly a deadline for there's doing it.
Certainly a deadline.
People don't normally have a competition to see who can do it first, but, you know, France has. So now we're talking about it.
Well done, France. So, yes, the other 27 or maybe 26, who knows, depends when you're listening to this podcast, members of the European Union have 2 years to get that particular directive implemented into their local copyright laws, at which point we will see whether or not the music industry can go and do a whole new round of talks, licensing deals with YouTube and get a better rate because of the new liabilities contained in Article 13/17. Should we officially start calling it Article 17? Or should I call it
Article... Should we just officially stop talking about it?
Article 13/17 for the rest of time. Or whether YouTube say to the music industry, we actually think we're already compliant with the new law, with our existing licensing deals and our content ID system, and if you think otherwise, see you in court, which was your prediction 2 years ago.
Yeah,
so
I'll stick with that.
We've now got 2 years to find out whether or not that prediction's coming true. So that's something to look forward to.
But we're not even here to talk about that this week. Instead, we are going to be talking about iHeartMedia's plans to celebrate being saved from bankruptcy by floating on the stock market.
Because who wouldn't want to buy shares in a company that's just out of bankruptcy? What an opportunity!
And as well as that, the role Topshop played in a song theft lawsuit against The Weeknd. But first, it's all right, everyone. The record industry is booming. Everything is fine. There is no need for concern. The IFPI has pulled together all of the stats from the various record industry trade bodies around the world and found that for the fourth consecutive year, last year, everything was up again. Revenues, specifically, up 9.7% on 2017.
Yes, so these are global figures for the recorded music business. We're not talking about published songs. We're not talking about live. We're not talking about merchandise. So you might wonder why we're spending a whole third of the podcast talking about it. But it is the IFPI, the International... Have you already said what it stands for in this bit?
The International Federation for Plopping Out Income.
It doesn't, though, does it? It plops out stats, not income. The International Federation of the Phonographic Industry
<That's it. laughs>
is what the IFPI stands for. And last week, they put out their stats pack. We mentioned that this was coming because, 2 weeks ago, the BPI, the UK Record Industry Trade Body, put out its stats pack.
Yes, and we said that's why it was doing that.
And we spent 10 minutes talking about that. And now we're going to spend 10 minutes talking about this, even though the top-level headlines basically the same, which is... Record industry is still in growth. Streaming boom still driving that growth. Premium streaming is really what it's all about. But hey, more money to invest in artists and stuff.
And that's what they're doing.
That is what they're doing.
That is what they're doing because they really talked about that. All the investing and anticipating that they're doing at the moment. Right up the front of this report, they've got three quotes from all the major label bosses. And they're all basically say, we're investing so much in our talent, and we are anticipating the next move of what's going to happen in the development of music consumption. And that's why we've been so successful. I mean, the next move in what's going to happen in music consumption is exactly what's happened for the last 4 years. So I'm not sure quite how much anticipating they're really doing. But they really talked up how good they were at it.
Yeah, so I went to the launch of this report, which for some reason happens in London. I suppose the IFPI's main base is in London. That's why it happens.
There you go, that's why.
In London. Answered my own question.
So London's an international city.
It is, for the time being. So they launched the IFPI stats pack at an event in London. And they have a representative of Sony Music. He was called Stu.
Yep.
And they had a representative of Warner Music. He was called Stu.
Mm.
They had a representative of Universal Music.
Stu.
If I'd been him, I'd change my name for the morning. But he insisted on having whatever his real name was. I think it was Adam. They had a guy from an independent record company.
What?
An independent record company.
Why?
Because things are going well for them too, don't forget. And
I had forgotten because they're not really mentioned in the report.
And so they were all on stage. And as you say, it was like, this is all very exciting. Francis Moore, the CEO of RFPI, did give the customary mention to the value gap and how things could be even better if only we could close that value gap. But Even that was basically in a positive sentence, because she was acknowledging the aforementioned European Copyright Directive being passed, and although Article 13/17 isn't quite as fierce as maybe the RFPI have been hoping for, they are still confident that it will strengthen the music industry's negotiating hand moving forward, and so maybe that's a step in the right direction, was basically what she was saying. So even the bit of the presentation that was honing in on the we need copyright law to change was kind of presented in a positive way. It was a weirdly positive event.
It was very optimistic.
It was very optimistic.
We'd better put a stop to that.
The biggest drama of the whole event.
I'm glad there was some.
Given that it was all, it's all going great and we're brilliant. That was basically what they were saying on stage. As I was leaving, it was in a basement in the Soho
Hotel.
Can't
be going that well.
A nice basement, to be fair. A very nice basement in Soho. The Soho Hotel. And on the way out, I managed to fall up the stairs, which I didn't even think was possible.
How far up the stairs?
It was, I would
say... Did you roll?
I don't even know what happened. I would say I started falling up the stairs about a third of the way up, and by the time I'd finished falling, I was pretty much at the top.
Wow.
I don't know how that had happened. Only one person witnessed
it. Well, that's...
Fortunately.
Everything's going up. That's that fourth consecutive year of growth. You can't even fall downstairs anymore.
There wasn't even gravity at the event. That's how positive everything is in the record industry. One person did witness me falling up the stairs, but I don't think she was actually at the event because she was upstairs. So I think she was at something else. So therefore, I wouldn't be able to work out who she was to get an eyewitness account of me falling up the stairs. But anyway, that's not the important bit. The important bit is that the record industry is up. And although I said that everything we're talking about here is basically a carbon copy of what we said about the UK's figures 2-3 weeks ago, whenever that was, actually, it is worth noting that the really big growth in terms of percentage increase was in Latin America and a handful of Asian markets. Because actually, if you take all the European markets together, I mean, the UK saw some growth last year. But if you take all of Europe together, it was like 0.1% growth. So pretty much static across Europe. Now, different European markets are behaving in a different way. So there were some European markets that saw decent growth. Apparently, there was some slightly complicated thing in Germany, where in 2017, there was a sudden one-off boost to public performance income for some reason. So therefore, public performance income hadn't really increased in 2018 because of this one-off payment in 2017. And so that had slightly skewed the Germany figures. And obviously, Germany is, I think, the second biggest market in Europe. I think UK is now bigger. So that had an impact. But nevertheless, growth in Europe is looking pretty slow now. Meanwhile, Latin America...
Well, that's up 16.8%.
16.8%.
That's good, isn't it?
So it's all about Latin America. Certainly, I think for Spotify, Latin America has been a real priority. I mean, obviously...
Do you think that's the anticipation they mean? Oh, we noticed that stuff's happening.
Let's
sell them some music.
Well, they might be doing more in that region. They might be beefing up their teams in that region. They might be reaching out to new talent in that region and investing in Latin American talent in a way they haven't before. They were all keen to talk about how in this global market there's huge opportunities for global artists in other markets who would never have previously been able to break through into the big recorded music markets, which I think when you're sitting in London in one of the traditional Anglo-American markets that used to benefit from that skew towards Anglo-American. Actually, I mean, on one level, brilliant that artists from other markets have a better chance at global success. But from a British artist perspective, actually, that's not good news. We would rather the US and UK continue to dominate and all of those Latin American and Asian artists can stay where they are. They're getting all Brexity Britain now.
But, don't do that.
But Latin America is a boom market. And as I say, has been a big priority for Spotify in recent years, I suppose, because the two massive markets in Asia, well, ignoring Japan as a traditional market, but the two massive emerging markets in Asia being India and China, Spotify isn't in China. And it wasn't in India until very, very recently. So for the last couple of years, in terms of emerging markets, Latin America has been a key region for Spotify and seeing the boom there that everybody is benefiting in. And talking of Asia, some interesting things going on there. So first of all, Japan, which is still a CD market. Germany now is kind of a digital market, just. But Japan's second biggest recording music market in the world, still very much a physical market. And indeed, physical sales went up there last year.
Don't they know? That's not how it works.
Have they not got the
memo? They've not been anticipating the new trends.
Well, the Japanese labels weren't represented. And obviously, the Sony guy doesn't have to anticipate what's happening in Japan, because perversely, as a Japanese-owned company, Sony Music, as represented at this event, is different to Sony Music Japan. But yeah, the other two should have been anticipating the need for more digital in Japan. So physical sales were up slightly in Japan, so still very much a CD market. But, I mean, China is the other thing. So now the seventh biggest recorded music market in the world after last year's figures were counted up. So it entered the top 10 in 2017. Last year, when we had our China conference at the Great Escape, and we had some representatives of the Chinese record industry, and I was saying to them, well, you know, what's your ambition? Do you think you could outperform US and Japan eventually, the two biggest recorded music markets in the world? Do you think you'll get ahead of the three big European markets, UK, France and Germany? And they did say that they thought top five in the next 5 years. So, I mean, they're very nearly.
They're on track.
They're on track. So China, which of course is totally dominated by its domestic streaming services, is continuing to boom.
Yes. I mean, by population, you would think it should be the biggest. But
that's not how things work.
That's not really how things work, is it? We have had a long time of people saying, oh, the opportunities are in China. And then actually people who are in the Chinese market going, no, they're not. But the Chinese market is growing and making money. See, Tencent Music is the big streaming company there. They're on a different sort of rev share deal to European and American streaming services, 50-50 deal. If that starts to make money and be good for both the streaming market and the record industry, you could well see people looking towards that as a, well, I think more the streaming services looking towards that as a potential way for deals worldwide to go.
That may turn out to be their ambitions, particularly if Tencent Music, obviously now a standalone division, seems to be quite acquisition hungry. So if it starts buying up services elsewhere in the world, they do actually have a service outside of China called Jukes, which I assume is on the 70-30 model. I'll have to check that out. But yes, as Tencent grows globally, and Spotify in particular under pressure to get more profitable, maybe they will look to rearrange those deals down the line. But I mean, you're saying China should be up there because of population. If you're going to go by that, then India should be number two.
Well, yeah.
And that's not even top 10 yet.
Yes, okay.
So it'd be interesting to see now that Spotify has launched there, Apple is there. Plus, of course, they have some local services, which actually at the moment are continuing to dominate. So lots of excitement about India too. So will we start to see India appear in that top 10 sometime soon? The other thing that was talked about at the event was Africa. Because it does sort of feel, when you look at what's being talked about at music conferences at the moment, that Africa, even though, okay, we always have to say it's kind of stupid to talk about Africa as being a single market because it's an awful lot of markets.
Yeah.
But people are sort of talking about Africa, or at least some of the African markets, now in the way they were talking about China 10 years ago. And as you say, when everyone got excited about China 10 years ago, way too early to be excited about China, that is now exploding. It does feel like India is finally taking off. Africa probably is about 10 years away, but I think there is some huge potential there. But it's interesting, when you look at the stats that the RFPI put out, there aren't any for Africa. The only bit of Africa that's in here is South Africa. And somebody did ask that question at the press conference, and had they not, I was going to ask it, because, you know, I was
You say that now.
You know, well, I did. I had it written down, and then someone else asked it. Because when I was in Tanzania recently, remember I was in Tanzania recently with all the Tanzanian artists and songwriters, and I was talking through the biggest recorded music markets. Well, not all of them. Some of them. And I was talking through the big recorded music markets in the world and the emerging markets and saying all the things we just said about China, India, etc. And one person said, where are we in the rankings? Where's Tanzania in the rankings? And it's like, yeah, you're not even in the list. And let me show you the IFPI's map with all the percentages on it. You'll notice Africa hasn't got a percentage on it. But they were talking about that at the event. And that's partly because outside of South Africa, it is incredibly early days in that market. It's only just starting to take off. But also they have the challenge of getting the data, because the major labels are still relatively small in a lot of those African markets. And there aren't generally local record industry organisations like a BPI in most of those countries. The collecting societies aren't necessarily set up like they are over here to be pumping out data about the money they're collecting. So it's actually quite hard for them to get the data, although they assured me they're working on it, because I told them that Tanzanian artists wanted to know, even if they're at the bottom of the list, they would like to be on the list.
Yeah.
So they are working on it. Interestingly,
being on the list is the first step.
It is, isn't it? Boomplay, which is the one streaming service in that region that seems to be gaining some momentum. There have been various false starts to try and get sort of streaming services off the ground in the African region. And Boomplay, out of Nigeria, but also has an office in Tanzania, does seem to be gaining some momentum, now has deals in place with both Universal and Warner, I think. But interestingly, for local talent, which are not represented by the major labels or the global distributors, they've had the direct upload thing for quite some time. Obviously, Spotify is moving into that space. YouTube and SoundCloud, I suppose, have always done it. But they do direct upload. So a lot of the artists in that region, they're direct pumping their music into Boomplay and then getting the royalties back. So I mentioned that to RFPI. They were aware of that. So it might be that one way they can get some data out of that market actually is off the service rather than off a record company or a distributor or collecting society, which is usually where they will get the data from. But I think we can officially remain excited about Africa, even though it is probably some way off that we're going to start seeing the serious money. And we still need to put the calculators in place to count that money once it's coming in.
Yes, but for all the countries who are on the list and are having their figures counted by the IFPI, the global figures put out last week showed that overall record industry revenue is now 47% streaming services, which might as well, let's say, half. That's close enough, isn't it? And as you said earlier, it's really paid for streaming that's making up the bulk of that at 37% of total income. So congratulations to the 255 million premium streaming subscribers out there. If you're one of those people, I think the IFPI is going to send you a badge.
Ooh, I'm one of those people. I'm looking forward to the badge. That was another stat in the report, 255 million paying subscribers as of 2018. Of course, with things like family plans, that does include everybody under that plan, which has helped to grow those figures quite rapidly in the last couple of years. But still, 255 million paying users, pretty good.
Download revenue, meanwhile, down 21.2%, and physical revenue down 10.1%. Letting everyone down.
But even though it continues to slide, still 25% of the global market, physical products, and most of that CD, a little bit of vinyl revival,
and some cassettes.
A sliver of cassettes as well in there. So although the physical market does continue to go down, 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 except in Japan, where it was slightly up, but still a quarter of the market. So I think it's always worth acknowledging that fact.
And Sync, also on the up, 5.2% up, now makes up, or still makes up, 2% of the entire market.
Yes, we talked about that when we looked at the BBI stats, and actually globally Sync's even smaller. I mean, some TV Sync will come under the broadcast and public performance revenue stream, which is separate to that and is actually also growing, and is currently 14% of the market overall. Of course, you'll remember when we were talking about the BPI stats for the UK recently, didn't have the public performance and broadcast stats in there because for some reason the PPL figures weren't included, but public performance is included in the overall global report. So some TV Sync will fall under performance rights, 14% of the market, but certainly when it comes to movies, games and ads, big budget side of Sync, it is still 2% of the recorded music market overall, despite all of the hype that Sync continues to get. So I think those are the key top line stats. This is a little book they gave us. There you go. Just if you hear that, just to prove I went. I got the book.
They could have posted it to you.
They could have posted it to me, but they didn't. I picked it up at the event. Look, there are the three quotes that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Rob Stringer at Sony, Lucian Grange at Universal, Max Lusada at Warner, all saying how they're investing in
the money is up because we have been very clever. We are very clever men. That's what they all said.
And we have invested.
Nothing to do with the blind luck of streaming coming along.
Well, they sat very patiently for the 10 years before Spotify got their business together, didn't they? So in that respect, well done, everybody.
No one said they were patient.
For your achievements.
None of those quotes say patient.
No, they're all
say we're all very clever.
Innovating and investing in new talent. So good news for all that new talent out there, because apparently
if
all this new cash is just being invested into that new talent.
And given they're so good at identifying trends, they'll be able to identify what is going to replace that 47% of the market when the entire streaming industry collapses.
That's you inserting some pessimism into the end of this section.
Yeah.
By pointing out.
It looked like we were going to end on a positive note, so I just wanted to just steamroller it.
I put it in the middle of the article in the CMU Daily, the fact that all of this is built on a very small number of streaming services, none of which really are making any money yet, and which could all fall over at some point with their unproven business models, or as you've already said, I suppose, seek to radically realign how the money gets shared out between the music industry and the streaming services, so maybe shifting from the approximately 70-30 model in most countries, something closer to the 50-50 in China, which would mean more money going into the pockets of the services and less of the record industry. Although the hope is, if those subscriptions continue to grow, and so the subscription pie, strudel, what did we decide on?
Cake.
Cake continues to grow, even if ultimately the music industry does have to accept a smaller slice of the pie, either because the services push up their share, or maybe even the publishers and the songwriters will continue to push up their share. Even though it will be a smaller percentage slice, there will still be ever-increasing sums of money so that A, we can continue to invest in all that new talent, and B, we can continue to innovate, and C, we can continue to put out glossy brochures at plush press events with all right pastries. They were all right, the pastries. Because someone took me for dinner in that restaurant recently. I won't say who, for the reason I'm about to explain. It was right. A music company, had a dinner for all those journalists there. The second most disappointing steak I've had in the last 12 months. The first was at Oslo Airport. So I've been having a lot of disappointing steak recently. So if you're going to that hotel, no steak, but the pastries are pretty good. And maybe if this trend continues next year, what else could they have as well as pastries at a breakfast press conference?
Toast.
Toast and jam. That's what I want next year.
You can really, I think you can judge how well an industry is going based on toast. That is the best indicator of how well. If it's just like stodgy white bread with margarine on it, you know things aren't going very well. But if it's got some seeds in it, it's probably all right.
Currently no toast.
No toast at all. So I'm not sure what that says about the record industry.
Maybe not as confident as we thought. But we'll regroup in a year's time and see how it's doing.
Still to come, the totally new way that shopping in Topshop can make you angry if you're a songwriter. But now, US radio giant iHeartMedia has filed paperwork with the Securities and Exchange Commission to prepare the way for an IPO, or initial public offering, on the old stock market. Which is exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, this is iHeart, the biggest radio company in the US, owns something nearing 850 AM and FM radio stations.
It's too many, isn't it?
Across America. Also has some online interests. So for starters, all those radio stations have websites and they all broadcast online. But of course, there is also the iHeart Radio service, the streaming service set up by this company, which they liked so much, they rebranded the entire company. Because the company used to be called Clear Channel.
Yeah.
And then they launched this online service called iHeart, and they got so excited about it, they rebranded the entire business. Except the outdoor advertising bit, which is still called Clear Channel. But they're about to spin that off as a separate thing, so let's not even mention that's existence.
Okay.
So
I strike that from the record.
Forget we ever mentioned the Clear Channel outdoor advertising business. So yeah, iHeart, biggest broadcaster in America, has the iHeart Radio streaming service, which basically really is a personalized radio service. So a straight-on competitor to Pandora in the US. So Pandora and iHeart, both offering personalized radio, either for free, which is what most people use, or there is a paid-for version. They do also both have fully on-demand Spotify, Apple Music-type services as well for anybody who wants to pay, which I think is nobody. But it is a company that is a traditional broadcaster, but also doing some interesting things online, although has been mainly in the news for the last few years, not because of any of that, but because of its rather high-profile debt problems and subsequent bankruptcy.
Yes, it had some big old financial troubles for quite some time and then filed for bankruptcy. Was that last year? Or the
yeah.
Year? Last year. And I believe we discussed it on this very show when it happened. It was all to do with the way a deal to buy the company had been structured, which meant that the company itself was lumbered with the debt.
Yeah, what they
of
call
being bought.
A leveraged buyout. Very similar to what happened to EMI when it got bought by Terra Firma. And like the Terra Firma EMI deal, just before the 2008 economic crash. So iHeart was bought through one of these stupid deals that people were doing back then, which left it saddled with phenomenal debts that it managed to service for a few years, but then got into a mess. So it couldn't service those debts, and so therefore had to enter the bankruptcy process. So yeah, that was about a year ago, although it had been a long time coming.
Yes.
So you're saying, was it last year or the year before?
Yeah.
We'd seen it coming for at least a year.
Yes.
But it was almost this time last year that it actually entered the bankruptcy process. And then since then, has been trying to negotiate a restructure with its money lenders. There were a couple of people who came in about buying some or all of the business. I know at one point, Liberty Media, which owns Sirius and Pandora and a big chunk of Live Nation, was trying to manoeuvre its way in, which would have been interesting from a music industry perspective, because had it become a significant shareholder in the iHeartRadio business, bearing in mind it's already a significant shareholder in the Live Nation business, Live Nation and iHeart having once been the same company under the Clear Channel brand before they got split up. But that didn't happen. And then at the start of this year, iHeart went back to the bankruptcy court with a final plan of how they were going to restructure their debts. It was part of that that they said they were going to spin off the Clear Channel advertising business as a separate thing. That all got signed off by the judge in January, although it's still slowly but surely working its way through that bankruptcy process. It is due to end the bankruptcy process and come out as a going concern business relatively soon.
Before its IPO, I would imagine.
Before its IPO.
Probably would be wise.
Although, seemingly, they filed their paperwork, as you say, with the SEC in the US this week, even though they're not 100% certain they are going to IPO.
No, they're not really saying what they're doing at the moment. They're just sort of keeping their options open. But even, I mean, there's talk of they might do a direct listing like Spotify.
Yeah, the unusual way.
I mean, I think there's talk because no one knows what they're doing, so they could be doing anything. So you might as well write an article about everything.
And say they might do a direct listing like what Spotify did a year ago. But it does look like once the bankruptcy's out of the way and they come out of that as a going concern, that they might then list on a stock exchange. If they do a proper IPO, which I think is probably more likely, they would raise a chunk of money, although the plan is to then just use that to, because they've still got debts coming out of this bankruptcy, just not quite the unserviceable debts they had before. So they would just use that to write off a load more debts. But if it does go to IPO, and therefore they have to start schmoozing Wall Street to try and get the investors interested, it will be interesting because although they have all that newfangled online stuff going on, they are first and foremost still an old school radio company, AM/FM radio company. And it does sort of feel, and I think we've talked about this before on Setlist, that the radio industry has a very tricky decade ahead of it.
Yeah.
Almost. It's one of the last of the sort of content businesses to be impacted by the internet, because where do you listen to the radio? In the car, in the kitchen, in the bathroom, probably the three places people are most likely to listen to the radio, which are some of the last places for the internet to properly arrive. And so it's only relatively recently that people have been connected to the internet and taking, whether it's a Spotify-type service or a podcast service or whatever, in those places. So the radio industry is about to face new competition. iHeart, more than any radio company, is doing interesting stuff online. So it is sort of looking to the future. But of course, as any media company, whether it's broadcast or print journalism, whatever, has found, the minute you go online, particularly if you go for an ad-funded model, which is what they have really done with iHeartRadio, you've got to sell some advertising, and even though you may be great at selling advertising for your old school media, as soon as you go online and try and sell advertising there, you're up against the Googles and Facebooks of this world, and actually it's quite hard to build an advertising-funded business there. So it will be interesting to see how Wall Street responds to iHeart's business plan and whether or not investors think that getting into business with a radio company, albeit one that is doing some interesting stuff online, is a safe bet.
Not only is it difficult to generate money online, but for radio companies like iHeart, there are also copyright issues, because I think we may have mentioned once or twice, copyright system in the US is weird, especially around radio, where royalties are different depending on whether you're broadcasting online or on AM and FM. And it's more expensive if you're broadcasting online, because you have to pay the record companies, but you don't on traditional frequencies.
Yeah, so as broadcasters in the US increasingly push their businesses online, they no longer enjoy this weird benefit that they have that broadcasters in most other countries do not have, which is when you're broadcasting music on your AM, FM stations, although you do have to pay royalties to songwriters and music publishers, which you would do through the collective licensing system, you don't pay anything to artists and labels. But once you're doing stuff online, you do. So in essence, your royalty bill doubles. There is a compulsory license for online radio and personalized radio in the US, which is administered by Sound Exchange. So you can rely on that if you need to. But crucially, your royalty bill goes up the minute you're doing stuff online. So as those radio companies become increasingly online services, the royalty costs, how much money they must pay into the music industry, increases. Plus, of course, the music industry in America isn't happy with the money it's already getting, whether that be the AM/FM money for the songwriters and publishers or the online money for the record companies.
Yeah, and in its SEC filing, it does note all those royalty challenges and issues, mainly because you have to. But, you know, they're aware of them. That's my point. But it says in the filing There is no guarantee that the licenses and associated royalty rates that currently are available to us will be available to us in the future. Increased royalty rates could significantly increase our expenses, which could adversely affect our business.
But as with all SEC filings, although, as you say, it is obliged to run through all the negatives when you're planning on putting your stock onto a stock market, it does also have the sell, where it gets all positive.
Gotta have that too.
So it reckons that broadcast radio holds a unique place in American culture, it says. Consumers listen to radio because the voice on the other side sounds like a friend. I think some of those angry talk radio DJs they have in America don't really sound like your friend, do they? But
no.
They also noted a Deloitte report that apparently said that radio, I don't know who at Deloitte said this, but that radio enjoys revenue, reach and resilience. I would agree, they definitely have revenue at the moment.
Yep.
And they definitely have reach for the time being. It's that resilience thing, because I think we're of the opinion that when it comes to a younger demographic, okay, teenagers may be listening to the radio in the car when their parents are in control, and when they get jobs in offices, there may be music on in the offices. But I think in the evening, whereas maybe 10, 20 years ago, they were tuning in to a radio station in the evening, they're now relying on a Spotify or a YouTube or an Instagram or wherever for that kind of music supply and general entertainment. But nevertheless, iHeart thinks that it's in a good place.
Yes, it says, we believe our advantage is driven by our unique ability to build relationships and engage a broad spectrum of audiences and demographics as we fulfill listeners' need for companionship and to be connected with the world.
So let's see if
I mean, you can do that with a dog and a smartphone, can't you?
Can you? We will see if the Wall Street types buy into that argument if and when the iHeart IPO goes ahead.
I mean, I think they will, but that doesn't really change the fact that radio's fucked at the moment.
I know, but hey, if you're a rich investor, why not invest in a fucked industry through a recently bankrupt company? Sounds like a good move to me.
Before we get to our last story this week, have we got something to plug?
Always got something to plug.
It's all about the selling, isn't it?
More busyness coming up. So it's the Wide Days Music Convention happening in Edinburgh this week.
Is it?
So you should all be heading up to Scotland for Wide Days. It's a brilliant music convention with the customary showcases as well. So talking in the day and then some great bands to see in the evening. And it's running from the 11th to the 13th. So stuff happening on the Thursday, Friday, Saturday. The main conference bit is on the Friday, although there's a bunch of stuff happening in the daytime on Saturday this year as well.
Surely you're not just here to talk up someone else's event, though.
It is true that there are some CMU sessions taking place.
Of course.
During the Wide Days programme on the Friday. So amongst the things that we'll be doing, I'll be moderating a panel for them on the future of music publishing. So that sort of links in to the latest phase of the Digital Dollar Project, which we're actually launching at The Great Escape in May, very much focused on how songwriters get paid.
Sneak preview.
From the streaming services, or actually how they quite often don't get paid and yeah. Why that's happening, which then all plays into how the music publishing sector is evolving, has evolved, needs to evolve. So a bit of has evolved, a little bit of is evolving, and a massive bit of needs to evolve. So I think we will be putting music publishing at large in the spotlight through the latest Digital Dollar Guide that's coming out at The Great Escape in May. And in some ways, this discussion at Wide Days this week will be preempting that by looking at where music publishing is headed. As well as that, we have a couple of CMU sessions. So we have a CMU DIY session, which is looking at building your audience as a self-releasing artist, or if you're working with a grassroots new artist. And then I'll be doing a session on, again, why you're not getting paid as artists and songwriters. So the top five reasons why you're not getting paid and what you can do to address those problems. So those are the free CMU things that are happening. I will be there. My colleague Sam will be there. We'll be splitting those sessions between us. There is one session which I'm quite looking forward to, which has nothing to do with us. It's a Wide Days event. It has no involvement of CMU at all.
I was joking about plugging other people's events.
But you'd enjoy this.
No, I wouldn't.
You would.
No.
You should come up for this, which is, it's called 10 Things I Hate About You.
Okay.
Journalists versus PRs.
Ooh.
So I think how it's going to work.
Only 10.
Is that they'll have some music journalists slagging off PRs and then some PRs slagging off journalists. And then we see who's more justified.
Journalists.
In their...
Actually, do you know what? I have good relationships with PRs. I like PRs. All of them.
All of them?
Not all of them, some of them.
You've certainly known about enough of them.
A lot of them are quite lovely.
I can think of four that you like.
There's more than four.
Six.
It's the ones that I have a zero relationship with, the ones who just stuck me on a mailing list. I think having me on a mailing list is PR. They're the ones that...
You don't like them.
So there's one thing. But I do know from some PRs that some journalists are real arseholes. that does sound like fun.
So that is not a CMU session, but I will sit in and maybe report back on who won. Who are the bigger assholes, the PRs or the journalists?
I mean, it probably is.
It probably is the journalists. But we'll report back on that. It's all happening at Wide Days. If you go to widedays.com, all the information is there. I've not mentioned the bands playing in the evening. All the information's on the website as well. If you get your tickets, see you there in Edinburgh, up there in Scotland.
So for more information on all of that and everything we've discussed this week, go to setlistpodcast.com and find the show notes for this episode. And finally this week, song theft. Who doesn't like song theft? Especially when that song theft is discovered in a shop. I mean, not that they discovered a stolen song in a shop. Well, they did. That is what happened, basically. Three British songwriters have sued The Weeknd, or The Weeknd, depending on how you want to say it.
Yeah, the Word document I was typing up this story in before it went in the CMU Daily last week did not like The Weeknd, and it kept auto-correcting it to The Weeknd. Which is why I switched to his real name. It was annoying me so much. As I write,
I did wonder.
I'm going to refer to him by his real name. I'm sick to death of typing The Weeknd and it making it The Weeknd and then me having to edit it back.
Well, no such problems here where we can pronounce it however we want with no autocorrect unless Jason starts meddling with the sound files. Anyway, these three songwriters, Brian Clover, Scott McCulloch and Billy Smith, accused The Weeknd of ripping off their song I Need to Love on his track A Lonely Night, which appears on his 2016 album, Starboy. I've mentioned Topshop a number of times in this episode as well, teasing this story. And that is because the first of those three, Brian Clover, became aware of the song in question when he was shopping in the Colchester branch of Topman. Topman being the menswear part of Topshop. For our international listeners who don't know what Topman and Topshop are, if you imagine a clothes shop, but just awful, that's about it.
Topshop was the fashion retailer that pioneered the in-store radio thing, really, didn't they, with Topshop Radio. Do they still do Topshop Radio?
I don't know. I haven't been in a Topshop for about 700 years.
I would expect that the fact that he heard this track, because it's an album track, it was never released as a single, which would suggest they were playing the whole album in the shop.
Yeah.
Which would suggest to me they don't have an in-store radio station anymore.
Or they've got a really lax in-store radio.
They just puts albums on and leaves them playing. But yes, so these British songwriters have sued The Weeknd and their lawsuit very much tells the story. So they wrote their song in 2004-2005. You might wonder why they don't know. I think it was that they maybe wrote it in 2004 and they recorded a version of it themselves.
Well, maybe it just took a really long time.
Maybe they worked really hard. Or they did it on New Year's Eve. And maybe they started at 11 o'clock and they finished it at 1 a.m. Anyway.
We just don't know.
Around about that time.
Well, we could probably find out. We just don't care. That's what I mean.
I've got the lawsuit on my laptop. Do you want me to get it open?
No.
So they wrote this song. Around about that time, they allied with the publishing wing of the London artist management company Big Life, Big Life Music. So they, I think, did a free song deal with Big Life, who were then shopping those songs around the labels and all of the sync agencies, I would assume. And then 3 years later, 2008, Universal Music Publishing bought the original incarnation of Big Life Music. So the songs ended up with Universal, who seemingly sat on them for 8 years. Nothing much happened. And so this is the story, according to the lawsuit. So this is what these three songwriters are alleging. They then got a phone call from Universal Music Publishing, who said, not much is happening with these songs, so we're going to end this deal and basically pass the rights back to you guys. And then 2 weeks later, the Universal Music Record Company, I think through its Republic Records division in the US, released Starboy, the Weeknd album. And then subsequent to that, as you say, one of these three songwriters was in, was it Colchester branch?
Yeah.
I was in Colchester recently, didn't see the Topman. Was in the Colchester branch of Topman, heard the track playing and was like, That's my track.
Yeah.
What the hell's that? And then they subsequently realised that The Weeknd had a track which they reckon is very similar to their song.
And they've made a YouTube video.
They've made the customary YouTube video.
Well, an audio thing on YouTube. It's just a black screen, isn't it?
Where they mash them together. They are very similar. We could probably include it in the podcast here.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure we could do that under the critical analysis exception. We wouldn't need either side's permission.
So we just need to critique them.
So,
all right, both of them are shit.
Well, in which case, let's pause. We can slot it into the edit and then you can come back with your rigorous analysis.
See, shit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's hard. There's very short clips, aren't they?
Very short clip.
But, I mean, I wouldn't have ripped that song off.
But they do sound quite similar. Of course, this being a song theft case, a plagiarism case, they have a musicologist on their team who has been hired to say just how similar these songs are.
It's very similar. Strikingly so.
Strikingly similar.
His name is Alexander Stewart, if anyone's updating their musicologist wall chart, which could well be. He says, my preliminary investigation and analysis has revealed substantial similarities between these two songs. Subjectively, I believe these similarities are so clear as to be obvious even to a casual listener.
That's people listening to this podcast. They're casual listeners. Are they casual listeners?
Well, they weren't expecting to be listening to that, so yeah.
That's pretty casual, and I would hope, certainly Alexander Stewart would hope, that the similarities were really obvious to our casual listeners.
Yes, well, he goes on to say, these similarities amount to both quantitatively and qualitatively the most important musical expression in both works. In my opinion, based on the level of detail in which these similarities are found, these similarities could only result from copying. I'm sure his voice cracked in just the same way as he was saying all this.
I'm sure it did.
So he got very angry, didn't he?
He got very angry there. So he's accusing The Weeknd, and all The Weeknd's tracks have about 87 co-writers. So The Weeknd and all of his mates who have a co-write on that track, presumably what they're saying is because Universal Music Publishing was looking after this song while this album was in development, somehow it got to Universal Music. So somehow it got to The Weeknd and his collapse. Should you say The Weeknd?
Yeah, I don't know why you've persisted.
That The Weeknd and his mates must have been able to hear this original song. Yeah. It wasn't that they were in the Colchester Top Man.
No.
They'd heard it in the
You wouldn't hear a song that you haven't yet recorded in any shop.
But it could have been the original one.
It couldn't, because no one ever recorded
in
it.
In Top Man. I think they recorded it.
Well, they did their demo.
And they might have had a mate who works for Topshop Radio, which possibly is still going.
Could be.
Anyway.
I'm going to Google it.
They're suing Topshop Radio.
Topshop Radio.
Is there still a Topshop Radio station?
No, it's a Spotify playlist.
It's a Spotify playlist.
Yeah, there's a misleading thing. The top result on Google suggests that Topshop Radio is now being run by Talk Radio, but that it's just the Topshop tag on the Talk Radio website.
So it's just
top investigating done here.
A Spotify playlist
is
all that's left of Topshop Radio. So these three British guys are suing in the Californian courts, and they want some credits, and they want a stake in the copyright, and they want some money. Actually, they want lots of money. They've listed damages, actual damages, please. Presumably that's actual damages, not statute damages. That's interesting. I wonder whether that means that the work isn't properly registered in the US, so they can't apply for statutory damages. I'd have to go back to the lawsuit and have a read about that. But actual damages, direct profits from The Weeknd track and indirect profits. Don't know what those would be. What are indirect profits? Those Topshop royalties, I guess.
Yeah.
There would be some PRS and PBL money coming in from that.
Maybe Topshop gave them a free T-shirt.
That's a direct profit, isn't it? Don't know. Anyway, the latest in a long line of song theft plagiarism lawsuits. And as is always the case, when those lawsuits go to court, if it does go to court, may go before a jury. Jury will be played that little snippet that we played you earlier, and then God knows which way they will decide, because It's always really hard to tell in these plagiarism cases. I'm sure the Weeknd's team will insist that any similarities are just common features of all pop music.
Yeah.
All pop music, which would mean by your analysis that all pop music is shit.
No, that's not my analysis.
But that's presumably what they'll say. It's just common pop features that happen to be in both records. Shut your face is what they'll say. And then a jury will make a decision. If it gets to court, which it probably won't. But sometimes they do.
Yeah, they do. I mean, there's no way this one will. But sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes they
sometimes.
Do.
Sometimes.
Well, if
not,
they
not
do.
This one.
If they do.
They won't.
We'll come back to it on set list.
Okay.
But if they tediously settle, we will never mention it again.
Well, it'll be fun and exciting waiting to find out. That means we're definitely never going to mention it again. Everyone's going to be on the edge of their seat for the rest of time.
Yep, tuning in every week just to check.
Even if we stop doing the show, people won't know because we could come back for a special edition if they go to court, which
Indeed.
They won't. But I haven't got much left in my voice. So let's wrap this thing up. That's the end of Setlist for this week.
Don't forget, we'll put links to Wide Days and all the things we've reported about. And why not Top Shot Radio Spotify playlist?
I can tell you a number of reasons why not, but, well, we'll see. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll just forget. I don't know. Who knows? That's it. It's finished. This episode is done. I'm just going to say the credit bits that I say at the end every week.
Do it that then.
There's no need for you to still be listening.
Do it quickly.
I don't know why they're still listening.
Maybe we'll paste
in. Maybe I won't even say it.
Well, maybe we'll paste in the end bit from last time's set list so we won't have your croaky voice. We'll have it like
maybe.
Done properly.
Yeah, maybe. I might say something different this time that will surprise everyone. And if you stop listening when I told you to, you will have missed out. So that's bad luck to you. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by me, Andy Malt, and Chris Cook. Produced by Matt Peaty. Edited by Jason Wolfe. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.
Recorded at Unique Facilities, Setlist is an Unlimited production.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, PayLater, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.